Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the Today's You podcast. I'm your host, Colin Sylvester. We have a huge weekend in college sports ahead with the Final Four, of course, but also the first big weekend for spring football games. We'll get to all of that extensively. Let's start out with some college basketball, though, and get Andrew Beverly and Bobby Reagan on the line. Hey, Bev, how's it going?
Doing well, man. Out here, it's a beautiful day. Taking the dog out for a walk out on the field. It's very, very nice. How are you?
I think it's about 100 degrees in Phoenix, so it's at least it's not freezing. It's not nice, but not freezing. Bobby, how you doing?
Nice. Good, good. How you guys doing?
Doing all right. All right, well, let's dive into the Final Four. I mean, there's plenty of storylines, so we can definitely take up half an hour pretty easily. You have some of the best coaches in the nation. You have to think all of them are either in the Hall of Fame or will be future Hall of Famers. But the biggest storyline is the undefeated Kentucky Wildcats. Bobby, we've kind of come back to this article a few times now that you wrote a few weeks ago about some teams that could give Kentucky some problems that match up well against the Wildcats. Wisconsin was one of those teams. Of the three teams remaining, and it doesn't have to be Wisconsin, but which team is the most capable of beating Kentucky, do you think?
Yeah, it's Wisconsin, and I kind of look at it as, if you want to compare it to like rock, paper, scissors, where Wisconsin can't beat Duke, but Duke can't beat Kentucky, and Wisconsin can beat Kentucky. So it's kind of, you know, one or the other. It's all about matchups, too. Michigan State I'm ruling out because Michigan State is by far the fourth best team in the Final Four. So if you're looking at the top three, you know, Kentucky is obviously the favorite, but like I said, Wisconsin can beat Kentucky, but Wisconsin can't beat Duke. Duke can beat Wisconsin, but Duke can't beat Kentucky. So by default, I'm going with Wisconsin as the toughest matchup.
So I guess, Bev, do you agree that, and sort of that as Bobby said, rock, paper, scissors, do you agree that Wisconsin can't beat Duke or that a Duke couldn't beat Kentucky? Is it going to take a miracle for one of those to happen, or is there a little bit more to it?
I definitely do think that Wisconsin has the best shot to beat Kentucky. I don't know if I don't know if I completely agree with Wisconsin can't beat Duke. I know they played earlier this year and Duke won in Wisconsin. That's really just like a one game sample size. I mean, I think it'd be hard. I do think. I definitely think the two best teams are Kentucky and Wisconsin. And I think Wisconsin. You know, I do agree though because Duke can't beat Kentucky because Duke is very, very similar, kind of like the way that Duke's post plays. Okafor is a traditional post player, and they don't have, you know, a four or five that can step out like Kaminsky can. So Duke doesn't really pose any matchup problems.
Winslow, Kentucky, they're four.
Yeah, but I still don't think he can really – I mean – not in the same way that, like, Kaminsky can pose matchup problems with Kentucky.
Kaminsky doesn't pose any matchup problems, I think.
On Kentucky?
Yeah. You got the perfect name one defender better than Willie Cauley-Stein in a one-on-one matchup against Frank. A seven-footer guarding a seven-footer who can step out on the perimeter. There's no one in America that's made to guard Frank Kaminsky better than Willie Cauley-Stein.
I'm just saying he hasn't had to do it. I'm saying that's what makes Kaminsky so versatile. I mean,
well, he's had to do it, but not to the level of Kaminsky. I mean, there's been other teams like that, but no one obviously is good individually as Kaminsky. The matchup is going to be Decker or Hayes. because Towns and Miles are going to have to guard those two. That's where the matchup's going to be. Kaminsky struggled last year without Cauley Stein in the lineup. I don't think Kaminsky has a good game against Kentucky this year either.
Hmm.
I think you're going to see Cauley Stein completely shut him down.
Wow. I don't think it'll be close. I think it's a double-digit win for Kentucky if Kaminsky gets shut down, even if Decker has a huge game.
Well, it's Nigel Hayes. It's going to be Nigel Hayes is where it's probably going to end up being. I don't know how they're going to match up, whether it's Lyles on Hayes or Towns on Hayes, but Nigel Hayes is going to be the most important player for Wisconsin.
So it seems like you guys are both thinking that the two best teams are Kentucky and Wisconsin.
I'm on the phone with like three people. Sorry, I can't really talk. I apologize. Sorry, guys.
You're good. Bev, you're just too popular. If Kentucky and Wisconsin are the two best teams, it seems like, does that make it automatically the most intriguing game? Because I am a sucker for the underdog. I know that it's a matchup nightmare for Michigan State. They're not anywhere close to as talented. But I would just love to see an underdog continue to win. Do you think, Bev, that the Michigan State Duke game is more intriguing because of that aspect? Or is it just will all eyes be mostly on that Kentucky-Wisconsin game?
I definitely think all eyes will be on the Kentucky-Wisconsin game. And I do think that if Michigan State beats Duke, it would be a huge upset. And I also think that if Michigan State were to win at all, it would be, like, arguably the most impressive, like, championship run, like, ever, considering Michigan State really isn't very good. We say all this about Michigan State. I mean, and it is a great run they've gone on. But, you know, I mean, they haven't really had that hard of a run. They beat UVA. And UVA is a good team, hurt, but good, and they didn't play well. And then, and the second-best team they played was Oklahoma. And the Big 12 has sucked, you know, throughout the whole entire tournament. You know, the Big 12 kind of proved that they're not what we thought they were at all. So I don't know, you know, I mean – I think what Michigan State has done is awesome. I think it's impressive. I think Izzo – I mean, this is probably Izzo's best coaching job he's ever done in March, and he's had a hell of a lot of good coaching performances in March. But, I don't know. I mean, I also hate Duke, so that's kind of, you know,
I figured that alone. Bobby, what percent chance – do you give Michigan State of beating Duke if they played 10 times?
I think they'd win, you know, 3 or 4 out of 10.
See, that's more than most people are saying.
I mean, you're talking about a one game tournament where a player like Travis Trice or Brent Forbes can get hot from outside for 40 minutes and, you know, score 24 points, and next thing you know, Okafor is shooting 4 for 10 like he did against Gonzaga, and it's a one-possession game down the stretch. I mean, and you have such a good – I mean, the coaching matchup's even. It's slight, you know, almost even between Izzo and Krzyzewski that, you know, it's not Krzyzewski out-coaching, you know, like Juan Kruger, for instance, or our favorite Rick Barnes. You know, he's not. It's a pretty even matchup, so you're not gonna lose that coaching matchup. So, I mean, Duke, they looked good, but at the same time, there's a little worry where Okafor didn't play that well last weekend. They were bailed out by Justice Winslow. I think Duke's still good enough to beat Michigan State, even if Okafor doesn't have a good game. But, yeah, I mean, you got a senior, you know, an older team. You know, Dawson, Valentine, and Trice are all older. Brent Forbes is an older guy that in one game they can absolutely win, you know, 30-40% of the time.
It seems like just about everybody is calling this run one of, if not the best coaching performance that Tom Izzo has had. So we might by default have to give him the title as the best coaching job to get his team to the Final Four this year.
I will disagree with that right now and then. I'll absolutely disagree with that.
I thought you might. We'll come back to you because I think I know what you're going to say. My question, though, Ev, is where does this rank on John Calipari's runs in March in terms of the best coaching job? You can say, I mean, clearly he has a great team, but there's a lot of other pressures that come with being undefeated, with having all of this NBA talent, and that should be taken into consideration as well, as I'm sure Bobby might say. But where do you think, Bev, this performance by John Calipari ranks in his career?
You mean, and so you're saying John Calipari's coaching performances in March, where does this rank?
Yeah.
In his own personal – oh, I mean this has to be up there toward the top. I mean, yeah, I mean, and I mean, he's done it. I mean, his team is a little more experienced this year. But even so, I mean, that game against, you know, Notre Dame. Sorry, I'm not trying to lose my train of thought because I don't want my dog to get screwed.
Dex, come here.
Sorry. There's so many freaking dogs out here right now, and I need to keep them away from them. But I think I would have to say that it was his most impressive. I mean, coming off an undefeated season, they're getting everybody's best shot. They're the best team. I mean, I'm going to be honest. In that Notre Dame game, I thought they were going to lose. And they were just brilliant down the stretch.
I haven't seen that game.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen a performance like that in a long, long, long time from a team. I don't know. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, they had every reason to lose that game. It sounds like a lot of that has to come back to coaching. So, Bobby, if you are arguing with the best coaching performance of the tournament not being Tom Izzo, why is it John Calipari over Izzo, considering the difference in talent?
Well, the biggest thing is, you know, people – and I said this in an article about the awards when Tony Bennett got named Coach of the Year. And, Kevin, if you're the commenter listening to this, this is for you. Best – is not most surprising. Best is the best. Too many times, and that's all the awards are these days, or when you want to say, is this the best of whatever, it's the most surprising is what people are just getting called now. Izzo's had the most surprising run to the Final Four out of everybody, but Calipari, this has been not only the best coaching job in the postseason by Calipari, this is the best coaching season of all time. There's never been a team like this Kentucky team where, you know, you have legitimate 10 NBA players on the roster. Your starting small forward gets torn ACL early in the season and you're buying into a whole new system. I will raise the question to anybody out there. Find me a better one season coaching job than what Calipari's done this season. It's unheard of for what he's doing.
In March or in an entire season?
The entire season.
Because, I mean, I would say in March, Jimmy V's run in the early 80s with NC State is without a doubt the most impressive run
in March
of all time.
It's the most surprising.
I mean, dude, he beat Carolina, he beat Virginia. The teams he beat.
Okay,
I mean,
that shocks to the 97 Arizona team is the most impressive team of all time because they beat the most number one seed in an NCAA tournament.
No, but. Yeah,
they're the only team that's ever done that. Talent. They have to be the most impressive then. If look at the teams they beat. They're the only team to beat three number one seeds in NCAA tournament. Does that make them the most impressive team? No, it makes them the most surprising champion.
I'm saying that NC State didn't have much talent and made a run that's the greatest run. I mean, it's surprising, but it's unbelievable.
For the course of a season, name someone who's done a better job than Calipari that he's done this year. It's the greatest of all time.
Over the course of an entire –
I mean, 10 NBA players with one of your starting players going down with a torn ACL?
I think most people would much rather prefer to have 10 NBA players on their team.
Right.
But
there's nothing to compare it to. I mean, it's people see this talent and expect this. And how many times have we seen great teams expected to do something like this fail? This team hasn't failed.
Yeah, it's one of those
Yeah. Things
and issues that is tough to come to or impossible to come to a concrete answer. But I think you have to throw it up there as one of the best seasons of all time from a coaching standpoint. No doubt about that. Bobby,
well, if they lose to Wisconsin, will that be the most disappointing ending to a season in history?
I would say
yeah.
that one. You could argue that or the UNLV losing to Duke. It's the same situation to a degree.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think this would be more disappointing because I think the talent on this Kentucky team is better than the talent on that UNLV team.
That's bold. Well, actually, no, it's not. No, it's not. As a whole, you're right. I don't think this Kentucky team has a player as good as Larry Johnson was, but I mean, I definitely think as a whole, as a collective,
yeah. This team is better. Yeah, this team is better than that UNLV.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of overall talent, yeah.
Yeah. So I think, it would go down as the most disappointing loss of all time because of just how good this team is. And to make it to 38-0, lose to a team that you beat last year in the same exact position would be, the most devastating loss of all time.
Wow.
Sorry.
No pressure, though, for all those Kentucky Wildcats playing on Saturday. So,
yeah, no pressure at all.
Yeah. There's stars galore in this Final Four. I mean, you can take, like we said, almost anybody from the Kentucky lineup. But, Bobby, you had an article today that's up on Today's You right now on the best X factors remaining. Bev, what do you think?
Come here.
What?
Nothing. I was yelling something out. I'm sorry.
What do you think, Bev, whether they're X factors or unsung heroes, what are the most under the radar or who is the most under the radar player in the Final Four who could make a difference between his team losing and his team even winning a national title?
Does Travis Trice count?
I'd say he's a pretty highly sung hero.
Yeah, I mean, recently, God, oh, freaking buddy. I'm sorry. Let me think. I mean, you can't really say Decker because Decker has been incredible. I mean, and you can't call him an unsung hero because he's been the best player. Maybe in the tournament, he may be the best player so far in the tournament. I'm trying to think. Oh, I mean, it's hard because all the players I would say have been incredible. Like, are you trying to ask me, like, somebody who's really going to step it up and, like, carry their team that hasn't done it so far? I mean, maybe Quinn Cook, somebody like that. Maybe Devin Booker or somebody like that. I'm not.
Yeah, I think Quinn Cook is a guy who could step up on his last run in college. Gasser, however you want to say it,
for
Wisconsin. Another guy like that. Bobby, if you had to pick one of the four that you chose in your article today as those X factors, who do you go with as the one that has the most potential to sort of break out and carry his team?
I would say it's Lyles because he has the most talent. Winslow probably would be a little more talented, but they're kind of the same player between Winslow and Lyles. But I think Lyles can use his mismatch a little bit better than Winslow can. And also the way that the offenses are ran. Winslow's kind of an afterthought. Which is weird. They're both kind of an afterthought, which is weird to say because they're both top 10 recruits coming into the year. But the way Duke runs their offense, Winslow is, he's the fourth option. The third option, depending on how Tyus Jones is playing that day or how Cook's playing that day. But Lyles is kind of forgotten about, and he is so skilled offensively. at 6'10", he has the ability to step out and hit, you know, 15 to 18 footers, can obviously post up. I think he has the potential for a bigger game if you're just looking at numbers, and can affect it because he can play the 3-4, and if you really want to go small, you can play the 5. Winslow can play the 3 or 4, but he's undersized at 4.
How y'all doing? Good.
Do you think that if one of these guys does step up, if you know, you say a Gosser or Wisconsin, does that give them the edge if somebody like Kaminsky doesn't have a big game? Are they right back with it, or do they need everybody to contribute for them to even have a chance?
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. You know, the key to that game is going to be Nigel Hayes and Sam Decker. Whoever gets that mismatch, whoever gets the second big guy that they have a step on, you know, that's what's going to be a huge factor for Wisconsin. The other matchup to watch is Andrew Harrison versus Bronson Koenig. Wisconsin's not a good defensive team. They rank average in KenPom. So to think that they're
just
a awesome defensive team, it's not weird. I mean, Kaminsky's a terrible defender. So you have no rim protection.
That's true.
Would you really go so far as to say he's a terrible defender? I mean, I would say that's one of the things he's improved the most.
Yeah,
a player who's developed.
Well, he improved from sucking to bad. He improved there.
He has some pretty good footwork down low now on the defensive end.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, he's not a rim protector. I mean, he's not a shot blocker or anything.
Well,
there's
nobody on Wisconsin who can protect the rim. So what happens?
No, there isn't.
Yeah, that's why they're not a good defensive team. Because when someone gets into
protecting
the
rim,
there's nothing
though
to do there.
I mean, they play pretty good defense against Arizona. And Arizona's a pretty explosive team.
Are they?
Yeah.
I don't think Arizona's that good offensively. I think they go into like a Utah type state where they just kind of zone out for too long of a time and they struggle offensively.
Well, I mean, and also it didn't hurt that Wisconsin went 10 of 12 from deep in the second half.
Right. But I mean, Wisconsin grades out as an average defensive team. So a matchup is going to be that Harrison versus Koenig because Koenig's not that good of a defender, and someone like Harrison can exploit that plus the size. And this is where not having a rim protector comes into play because, you know, are you going to try to take away the lob, or are you going to try to take away, you know, a 6'6 point guard getting into the lane against your 6-foot point guard? So that's where the two matchups, I think, are going to be big.
Yeah, so it seems like we sort of highlighted the Koenig and Harrison matchup, also the Lyles and Nigel Hayes matchup, and those really could determine the game. Bev, is there a matchup in the other game that you're going to be watching closely that could determine the game, or what's the best matchup on that side of the bracket?
I'd probably go with Okafor against anybody who guards him. because, you know, I mean, Bobby and I both thought Gonzaga was going to be Duke because of the whole, you know, Okafor thing, and Okafor was shut down. And, I mean, you know, luckily for Duke, Matt Jones out of nowhere turned into the best basketball player in the world. And, and they won the game. I mean, he and Winslow were the game changers. I'm not sure. But, I mean, they kind of proved against Gonzaga that Okafor doesn't need to be great to win.
Right. I mean, they have so many other that you saw against Gonzaga. They didn't get a huge game from Okafor, but they were still able to control it, especially towards the end there. And if a player like Winslow steps up, all of a sudden it covers up that lack of productivity from Okafor. So I have a feeling I know what Bobby's answer is going to be, so we'll go to you, Bev, first, and then get Bobby's take. Who's your champion this weekend?
In terms of giving a hot take and being different, I'm going to say Wisconsin.
Wow. Okay.
I think Wisconsin has another big second half, and they win by like 3.
Wow.
And then they beat Duke in the final.
Which which Bobby said.
I don't know
be...
what the hell I'm saying. I think Kentucky is going to win. I mean, come on. Like, yes, I think Kentucky is going to win. I think they're going to beat Duke. But, yeah.
Wisconsin is not a far-fetched pick. You know, they had a great
no,
game
not.
Last year. I could definitely
it's
see
better than Notre Dame is. So, I mean, they're a better team than Notre Dame is. Played like garbage in that game.
Bobby, do you think Bobby?
Although Notre Dame didn't play especially great in that game. That would open up a whole new conversation. But
yeah.
I'm done. Sorry.
I mean, I think they played pretty well. Bobby, we'll get one last take from you. Is Kentucky-Wisconsin the national championship game? Is the winner there going to win the national championship, whichever way it goes?
It should be the national championship game, but if Wisconsin and Duke wins, Duke's going to win the title.
Oh, yeah, because of your Wisconsin
yeah.
can't beat
Duke.
But should be
Kentucky-Wisconsin should be the title game.
I think it's the best game. It'll be the most entertaining
yeah.
game of all three. All right, well,
I agree.
Look forward to the Final Four this weekend and national championship game on Monday. Thanks, guys, for jumping on the podcast. You can read both Bev and Bobby multiple times a week on Today's You and find them on Twitter. Bev is at Andrew_Bev, and Bobby is at UKLefty22. Thanks, guys, and have a good one.
Bye, thanks.
Thank you. See you. Bye.
All right, let's move on to some college football. Seems this weekend like it's definitely getting overlooked with all the Final Four action going on. But this coming weekend will be the first big weekend of spring games, so it's nice to have some football, some actual games being played again. We have Dustin Schutte and Tyler Waddell coming on now. How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Hey. Doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. All right, well, let's jump into some of the spring games. Tyler, you're actually going to be in Ann Arbor this coming weekend for the Michigan spring game. We're really looking forward to it. Going to have a ton of coverage on Today's You for it. So I want to get your take, first of all, on what do you think are the biggest question marks for Michigan State heading into the spring game? What are they trying to find out in this game?
Well, mainly, I think if anybody's paying attention to the headlines today, it's going to be all eyes on the quarterback position. John Harbaugh landed another quarterback transfer in addition to John O'Korn a few weeks ago today. In Iowa transfer Jake Rudock, and he, once he graduates in May, will be eligible to start immediately this fall. So that kind of throws a new element into the quarterback battle, which was between Shane Morris, Spate, Malzone, and Gentry, the latter two being true freshmen. It makes it really interesting because obviously Rudock has had a lot of success in terms of, you know, statistics, maybe not win-loss column. But he did. He was second in the Big Ten in passing accuracy last year. And that is something that Harbaugh is going to need for his offense to get that kind of off the ground and improve the running game as well. So really, my eyes will definitely be on the quarterbacks when I get there. And he certainly has his options. And I know Zach Gentry is not going to be there until this fall. But he's actually my favorite to win it right now because if you'd seen this guy's highlight tape or even looked at him, and he's pretty hard to miss. He's 6'7" and can throw the ball like 70 yards. So.
Yeah, it seems like he's the one with the highest potential. So Jim Harbaugh would definitely love to have him play to his potential right away. That's a lot to ask from a freshman. But let's say Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to say, there was a column out on one of the Michigan newspapers that said Zach Gentry, an NFL scout is already saying Zach Gentry has an NFL arm right now. So
Wow.
He's that, you know, I don't know how to take that with a grain of salt, but, you know, how John Harbaugh likes his quarterback, so.
Yeah, I remember hearing that about a guy named Tim Tebow as well. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. But Dustin, right. let's say that whether a true doc or one of the freshmen, that Jim Harbaugh this season gets a quarterback that outperforms the expectations at Michigan, and they really get some good production there. Does that take Michigan to a contender in the Big Ten, or are there more holes there, or I guess too many holes there, even if the quarterback situation plays out the best way possible?
I still think you're looking at a middle-of-the-road Michigan team when it comes to the Big Ten and talking about the East Division going up against teams like Michigan State, Penn State, and Ohio State. I mean, there's still a lot to compete with there in that East Division. So getting Jake Rudock, or if somebody steps up as a freshman into that quarterback role, I still think that's going to be a huge benefit. And you're talking about now maybe an 8 or 9 win Michigan team as opposed to maybe a 6 or 7 win Michigan team. I still think offensively with Devin Funchess out, you know, heading to the NFL draft and not really having very many weapons offensively, I think that Michigan is still going to struggle a little bit in the opening in their preseason or pre-conference schedule, I should say. And we'll see how quickly they get things moving. I mean, Rudock, this is an interesting story here because is it going to be – are we going to see the true Jake Rudock? I mean, we saw Harbaugh obviously coach Andrew Luck and get him to the NFL, and now he's performing really well. I think it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, that hesitation we saw with Rudock and the really inability to throw it down the field, if that was a product of the way Rudock plays, if that's his style, or whether that's more of kind of the vanilla offense that Kirk Ferentz has ran at Iowa since 1999. But I think overall Michigan has got a huge boost. Now they got some competition at that quarterback spot, and it should be an interesting season, but I still think there's too much talent in the Big Ten East for them to be a serious contender at least this year.
Yeah, you look at the recruiting class that they had, and even though Harbaugh did a great job sort of salvaging it late in the game there, it's still not up to traditional Michigan standards. So it does still look like, even if they get great production out of these freshmen, it'll be a year or two more. Dustin, I'll go to you first. There's been a lot of talk this week about Jonathan Taylor and that whole situation at Alabama. He's now been kicked off the team for yet another series of charges against him. Do you think this is something that the NCAA needs to address in terms of programs taking a chance on players that are that still have charges pending, that have pretty troubled past from, you know, just getting in trouble with the law? Is it something that needs to be taken over and looked at more closely, or is it just head coach, it's up to you, you make the judgment call?
Well, I think the NCAA would love to get its hands involved with this. That way there was some sort of process that was regulated that all head coaches or all players that had trouble with the law could go through. However, with everything that seemed to crumble apart with the Penn State situation and losing bowl games and losing having to donate you know, millions of dollars to foundations and just getting wrecked through the NCAA when it was really a legal matter that was at hand, I think that will – force the NCAA to back off or at least weigh their other options and you know, talk with their attorneys and their lawyers a little bit more closely to see what they can do. But I think this is a new issue, and it's going to be interesting to see if there's going to be fan reaction like we saw with Ray Rice in the NFL. I mean, that was NFL fans, you know, not some of the players, certainly a lot of female fans of the NFL got involved with that. It'll be interesting to see if the people try to take a stand and say, you know, the NCAA needs to take a look at this thing, or if they just let it go by basing, you know, his judgment call saying, you know, hey, we're going to give this guy a second chance and the NCAA keeps hands off. But I think with everything with Penn State, it makes it a really interesting yet really difficult situation for the NCAA to get involved.
Yeah, there was an interesting article this week on Today's News by Ryan Wooden. And he took a look at, one, whether that second chance was really earned by Jonathan Taylor. But even more like that, it seems like there's very little risk for these programs to take on these players because the worst-case scenario, which this is pretty much the worst-case scenario in terms of, you know, on-the-field production for Nick Saban, he has a little bit of bad press and he moves on, he plugs in another guy in there, which is not a huge problem considering the potential that a guy like Taylor brings. So I could definitely see whether it's, I don't know, the NCAA or the institutions themselves starting to take a look at what players they're bringing on, especially when they're transferring and have been dismissed by other programs before. Another game we're going to be at next weekend, or not this coming weekend, weekend after that, will be USC. Today's U will be there live. I will also have coverage on todaysu.com. Dustin, the Trojans are right up there in the top five in terms of preseason rankings. A lot of people are saying they could win the Pac-12. But you have to remember, Oregon is still there, and they're losing Marcus Mariota. But they've had so much success the last 5 years plus. Who do you think is the favorite in the Pac-12, if you had to name a favorite right now?
Well, if you take into account that I picked USC to make it to the college football playoff next season, I think that I'm going to go ahead and favor the Trojans. But, you know, the Pac-12 is very interesting because you got teams like Oregon that's going to be really good again. I mean, I think their fast-paced offense isn't going to go anywhere. Arizona is going to be an interesting squad with a new Solomon coming back, and then having some pretty good offensive players returning under Rich Rod. But I think USC still has the most talent returning. I think Cody Kessler coming back at quarterback is huge. They've got some young, talented guys in that recruiting class that may make an immediate impact. I think they just have all the pieces. And I know we talked about this on another podcast. You know, this we've seen this story and heard this tale before, and then it kind of flounders off, and USC winds up a middle-of-the-road team. So we'll see if they live up to the hype. But right now I think it's USC one, and then Oregon probably a close second. And you can't forget about Arizona out west because they're a program on the rise, and they've knocked off Oregon the past 2 years. So I would be surprised if anybody else came out of that Pac-12. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Arizona, and they've beaten all the big programs. You can also throw Stanford in there the past 5 years or so, USC. They've had success against all of them in different years, but clearly they can beat the top dogs. And Arizona was a win away from potentially going to the college football playoff this year. So definitely have to keep an eye on them. If there's one thing, Dustin, at USC that you think is going to either put them in the playoff or keep them out of it, what is it for the USC Trojans?
Well, I would say it has to be not being able to score as much as they did this season. And there's just so much offense that goes on in the Pac-12. And you know, it's hard to keep up with that pace. I mean, we saw Arizona State put up, you know, I think 50, 60 points a couple times, and then they had instances where they struggled to score against UCLA. So, you know, keeping up with that pace on a regular basis and the high demand of offense that is required out in the Pac-12, I think that could be, you know, it's much easier to stub your toe that way than if they have a stronger defense and can compete and shut down some of those offenses. But I think if they want to compete, they're going to have to put up a lot of points. And then their defense is going to have to be – doesn't have to be great because Oregon's defense wasn't great a season ago, but it does have to be solid. Can't give up 30 or more points a game. But, you know, trying to put out that many points on a regular basis can get a little tiring.
Yeah, the defense has definitely suffered more during the sanctions era, if you will. I think mostly because when you have fewer scholarships, you can still get some really talented athletes on the outside and – the offense can absorb a loss in talent a little bit better just because you have some special playmakers. The defense really has suffered the last few years in Los Angeles with the Trojans. But definitely excited to see how that spring game turns out and what we'll be looking for into the fall as the Trojans will probably be a top five pick. Thanks, Dustin, for checking in on the spring games. Tyler Waddell also giving us the latest on Michigan. He had to step out, but definitely follow all his coverage on Today's U this week leading up to the Michigan spring game. You can find him on Twitter at Tyler_Waddell. And Dustin Schutte, you can catch him on Today's U and find him on Twitter at Sharp_Shooter. That's Schutter. Thanks, Dustin. Have a good one.
Thanks, Colin. You too.
All right, well, thanks for joining us on the Today's You podcast today. Keep an eye out for all those writers on Today's You. You can see them every single day on todaysyou.com. And make sure to keep an eye out for our spring game coverage this weekend of Michigan, and then the next weekend, that'll be April 11th at USC.